The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to another unsettling installment of Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight we bring you a story that will leave you questioning reality itself. Tonight's tale comes from the mind of Tor Anders Ulven, a chilling exploration of fate, consequence, and the horrors that lurk in the spaces between. This isn't just a ghost story or a campfire fright. This is something deeper, something that lingers. And tonight's story is featured courtesy of Velox Books, a small press with an enormous appetite for horror. If you crave fiction that pushes the limits of imagination and reality, you'll want to hear more about them later in the show, so stick around. If you enjoy tonight's show, take a moment to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you tune in. And if you're watching on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, subscribe, and ring that bell so you never miss an episode. Want to go ad-free? Become a patron at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, and you'll gain exclusive access to our entire library of content, including ad-free episodes and bonus material. It's the best way to support the show and keep the nightmares alive, and starts at just $7.99 per month, or even less if you choose an annual plan. Now, prepare yourselves as we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Some choices in life are small. Some are monumental, and some take you down roads you were never meant to walk. Sal never had many friends, but Cecil was different. Charismatic, mysterious, and utterly unshackled by the rules of the world. When he introduces Sal to something ancient, something incomprehensible, the illusion of free will shatters. Because in this world, the past can be rewritten, but never without cost. Every step forward erases a path behind. Every decision demands a sacrifice. And when the journey begins, there is no turning back. From the mind of Tor Anders Ulven, courtesy of Velox Books, and performed by the talented Jeff Sturtevant, this is The Pathless.
The Pathless, Cecil wasn't like most people. For one, he was my friend. And most people, statistically speaking, weren't my friends. But more than that, Cecil had this aura about him. A certain larger-than-life quality, like he knew something the rest of us didn't. He'd drift through life without a worry in the world, and even with his physical challenges, he'd lost an eye and an arm in a car accident. There was nothing that could stop him from enjoying existence to the fullest. The first time I met Cecil, he walked up to me with a drink in one hand and nothing in the other. And asked me if I've ever fantasized about killing someone. Not a usual question at these parties. Mostly psychology, philosophy, and literature majors. Pretentious bunch. And when I answered, "Yeah, sure, who hasn't?" I was half expecting him to psychoanalyze me or something. "Wanna murder someone right now?" he just proposed, somehow lighting a cigarette whilst sipping his drink. It had seemed like a joke at first, but as the night went on, he kept insisting I give it some serious thought.
"It will change you," he said. "I can tell you're in need of liberation."
He'd used that word often. Liberation.
"It's like all the stuff holding you back. All the baggage, the norms, the fear of failure, failure itself. All these things. You can overcome them. You can be liberated from them."
"How?" I asked. He smiled. A Cecil smile, I'd eventually come to call it. A sly grin. Like he just knew he had me hooked.
"Stick around, Sangria."
That's not my name, by the way. Cecil gave it to me because I kept sipping on sangrias.
"And I just might tell you."
As it turns out, I did stick around. As I touched upon earlier, I didn't have many friends. It's not that I was bullied or even disliked. I simply had a hard time connecting with anyone. Social interaction puzzled me, and when I did put myself out there, I was generally just ignored. Too weird, too boring, too broken, too je ne sais pas. Take your pick, I guess. Cecil was different, though. He had this way of looking at me and telling me how I felt.
"You're sad now, Sal."
That's my real name. Well, kinda, he'd say. And then I felt it. The sadness. Like a constant ache expanding in my gut. It wasn't magic or anything.
I think.
It was just the things he'd seen. The places he'd been. It made him more aware. Spatially. Emotionally. Spiritually. "How do you do that?" I'd sometimes ask. Cecil smile.
"Stick around."
I was going through a rough patch back then. Life just isn't for everyone, I used to tell myself. My future was closed behind heavy metal doors. The key to unlock it hidden somewhere out of sight. I couldn't figure out what to do or even how to do it. And it felt like I was caught in a wild river, forever swimming upstream. I struggled at school, I struggled at home, and everywhere I turned, there seemed to be nothing but more struggles ahead. I'd planned my suicide, down to the very last detail. I made it unnecessarily complicated and specific, and in all honesty, it was the only thing keeping me from doing it, the effort it would take. Some days I'd wake up, a void of nothing inside, and I'd ask myself, "Can you be bothered to kill yourself today?" And most days, the answer would be no. Cecil made it a little better, though. He told me about his father, how he'd lost him and how much it had hurt.
"But here I am," he said, "happy,
alive, living. But even with him, knowing what he'd endured, the darkness would sometimes take hold, and I'd feel myself slipping away.
"You're depressed now, Sally."
"That's my real name," Cecil told me one day. We were smoking behind the school cafeteria. Cecil didn't even go to the same school as me, but he'd show up unannounced. Sometimes during a lecture, and just drag me along with him. He tried to nudge me, momentarily forgetting he was missing his arm, and we both laughed at this.
"Phantom nudge," he said, Cecil smiling.
He was handsome, even with a gaping hole where his right eye should be, dirty blonde hair reaching his shoulders, a suave attitude that suited his gaunt frame. I could see why girls swooned over him. He'd joke about it sometimes.
"I just let them finger my eye hole, and they're all mine."
"I am," I just said, lowering my gaze. "I am depressed." It felt good saying it, like it wasn't only my burden to bear anymore. Cecil nodded.
"You've stuck around for a while," he said. "I feel like you're ready to know the truth."
"Is this the part where you tell me I'm adopted?" I was expecting maybe a snort or a smile at the very least, but a stark seriousness overcame him, and I felt myself entranced by this new Cecil, one that had a troubled mind. He looked at me somberly.
"If you were to pinpoint the exact reason for your depression, for the heaviness in your heart, could you do it?"
I shrugged. "Life? The universe? Everything?"
"Not like that," he said. "A point in your life, a forked path, where your choice inadvertently led you to here, to now, to depression and suicide."
I hadn't told him about my suicide plans, and I felt offended that he'd think that of me, even if he was totally right about everything. "Fuck you," I said, dropping my cigarette, stomping it to the ground aggressively.
"I've been where you are, Sal," Cecil said, a sincerity in his voice I just couldn't ignore. "But there are ways to liberate yourself, to rebuild yourself in your image."
"Yeah? How?"
"It doesn't come cheap, but it can be done. I saw it in you the night we met. I told you that. You need to be liberated. You need to be set free, or else this fucking world will snuff you out, one way or another. And I, for one, would hate to see that happen."
I looked at him, tears slowly filling my eyes. "Does it involve murder?" I asked. He laughed then, all hearty and warm.
"It could," he said. "All depends on your path."
I thought about it for a while, wiping my tears all stealthily.
I got something in my eye.
After a while, I turned to him and nodded. "I got a path," I said. Cecil smiled.
"I know," he said. "Meet me out by Reaper's Creek after dark. Just after the bridge. There's a crossroad. You know it?"
"Yeah."
"Bring something that reminds you of that path. Can be anything, but the memory must be crystal clear."
"How about the gloves I wore when I killed my sister?" Cecil stared at me, wide-eyed, unflinching gaze.
"Yeah," he said. "That'd do it."
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
I was 10 years old when I killed my sister. She was only 4. People kept telling me it was an accident, that it wasn't my fault. And I've had 4 counselors and 3 psychiatrists laying the old, there was nothing you could do on me. But I know what I did. I killed her, plain as day. And that path, that choice, has cursed my every step since. I did as Cecil instructed and showed up at the crossroad beyond the bridge just after dark, the gloves wrapped up in old newspapers. I honestly can't tell you why I kept them around. A reminder of what I'd done, maybe? Punishment? Penance? Cecil was already there, a lit cigarette hanging idly from his mouth. He was holding a shovel and greeted me by hoisting it into the air awkwardly.
"Glad you made it," he said.
I held out the gloves, almost like an offering. I got them. Cecil smiled.
"Perfect," he said.
He slammed the shovel into the ground, making it stand upright like a spear. And then he went all silent for a while, puffing a cigarette, idly staring at the dusty soil.
"I just realized," he said, "that I'm missing an arm. Mind giving me a hand with this?" Cecil smiled.
I laughed and grabbed the shovel. "Sure. You see, the trick," I said, "is to have 2 arms." He told me to dig a pretty deep hole, exactly at the center of the crossroads.
"It is to symbolize all possible outcomes," he said. "At the center, you can choose all paths freely."
I nodded and toiled away, whistling a merry, though woefully out of tune, "Diggy Diggy Hole." When Cecil figured I dug deep enough, he put his hand on my shoulder, looked me deep in the eyes, and said,
"This is where you can choose to leave. After the next step, there's no going back."
He thought about this for a moment before he added,
"Well, there is, but not the way you think."
Up until that point, I didn't really believe him. Mostly, I was just there to spend some time with my best friend. But now, all of a sudden, it felt really strange. In a way I can't really explain, like the air around us thickened, a heavy sense of sobering reality setting in. Reality and something else. Something ancient and loathsome. I exhaled deeply, feeling goosebumps prickling all over my body. "I'm ready," I said. "Let's do this." Cecil nodded and picked up my newspaper-wrapped gloves, handing them to me.
"You have to do this part yourself," he said. "Put them in the hole."
I did as he said, bent down and placed them ceremoniously in the dirt. "Now what?" I asked.
"Now we say goodbye," he said, taking my hands in his. "I can't follow you where you go next."
I smiled. "See you later?" A single tear rolled down his cheek, and I remember I was shocked by that. Isn't that strange? I'd never seen him sad before. I put my hand on his face, halfway cupping it. "What's wrong, Cecil?" I asked. Cecil smiled.
"Nothing," he said. "I'm just so happy for you. You get to see it now, Sal. You get to live it."
He took the shovel and scraped some dirt on top of the gloves.
"He'll be here soon."
"Who?" I asked. "The devil?" Cecil laughed.
"I don't think so. Never did catch his name, though. He'll be your guide. He'll explain it all so much better than I ever could. Just remember one thing, Sal."
"What?"
"The sacrifice. It will decide how much you can change. Sometimes, a little nudge is enough. But other times..."
"Sacrifice? What do you mean, sacrifice?"
"You have to."
And then he was gone. For a moment, a tiny fraction of a nanosecond, it was as if I'd never met him. Like I'd never gotten to know him. And I was so confused. Who did I just talk to? Was it a dream? And then I remembered him again. And I was so sad, so heartbroken, so alone. And then I realized that it wasn't Cecil who had vanished. It was me. Cecil once told me, drunk and high out of his shit, that there were some things out there that the human mind just wasn't equipped to deal with.
"Shapes and colors and spaces that we weren't meant to see. And if you let them, they'll destroy you, Sal. They'll fuck you up. Make you forget who you are. I spent decades once, trapped in spaces and colors and shapes. Centuries, maybe. Time doesn't work there, you see. Could have been eons for all I know. Took me longer than that to get my shit back together again, though. Let me tell you."
Standing at the crossroads where everything around me changed, I was starting to realize that maybe Cecil wasn't as full of shit as I'd previously suspected. The sensation cannot be described in words. Not really. I could approximate imagery that would allow you to maybe feel a fraction of what I was feeling. That's it. To understand it fully, you'd have to experience it. And I don't wish that fate on my worst fucking enemy. It was like someone stuffed a million new light receptors into my retinas, and for the first time, I saw colors that shouldn't exist, that couldn't exist. A color for death. A color for insanity. A color for all the unspeakable acts and depravities known to man. For all the ailments and afflictions and disorders. Every last blood vessel in my eyes burst open at once, and my brain just couldn't handle it anymore. I felt it expanding, pushing against my cranium, and soon I sank to the ground. Unable to process the madness that assaulted my senses. I don't know how long it took me to recover, but it was like Cecil had said. Time doesn't work there. It could have been a second. It could have been an eternity. All I know is that I was conscious again. More than conscious, even. Like I'd been temporarily allowed to mentally exist in a place not meant for my kind. Next came the spaces. Impossible angles. Impossible structures. Impossible pathways dividing infinitely, curving around and into themselves, disappearing and reappearing in ways I shouldn't have been able to understand, yet I did. The spaces existed, and they didn't. like a pulsating vein contracting and expanding. Every drop of blood pushed through the arteries, opening new paths. At some point, someone grabbed my hand. It felt wrong, unnatural, yet I felt myself squeezing it ever tighter.
"It may take some time. We are not yet accustomed to you."
I wanted to look at the owner of the voice, but something told me it would be a very bad idea. So I just kept my bleeding eyes focused on the ever-shifting unreality unfolding before me, feeling my brain slowly leak out of my ears, drop by drop.
"Every traveler is unique. We do our best to suit your organic and chemical composition."
And then came the shapes. Some looked vaguely familiar. Fleshy appendages, white veiny eyes as big as planets, vast landscapes of pink skin and swollen veins. Some were alien, featureless almost, spherical and non-reflective, orbiting the eyes, like distanced pupils dancing in and out of focus. Others were otherworldly, impossible to put into words, shapes that could not and should not occupy the human mind. They were all as one, a single, unfathomable entity, a god of the crossroads. An ever-evolving sound assaulted me from all directions, from within my bones, pumping through my veins, from outside myself. And when my eardrums exploded, I realized that the god of the crossroads was speaking to me.
"Who are you?"
I asked, falling to my knees, blood streaming down my face in the absence of tears.
"Names have no meaning here, but some call it the pathless, the one who is all paths but has none of its own. Your kindred, Cecil, called it the Liberator."
"You know Cecil?"
"We know all possible paths and all travelers that cross them."
I tried to focus on a familiar shape, an eye, the size of a sun.
"What is it telling me?" I asked. "You must choose your path."
It was only then I realized I was wearing the gloves. I looked down at my hands, wiggling my fingers, like the sensation was completely new to me. I turned my gaze to the owner of the voice, the mangled carcass of my sister Sarah. Her left eye was still dangling out of the eye socket, just like I remembered. I couldn't help but to smile.
"Behold," Sarah said, raising her broken arm,
the bone still sticking out of the elbow, a pale and dead finger pointing ahead. The space changed, the pathways diverged, and we found ourselves standing on a road of pink flesh, the lanes divided by blue pulsating veins, my spontaneous metaphor having become the unreality.
"You stole that from my mind," I said. "As explained, it may take some time, but we shall accommodate your organic and chemical composition."
The pathless spoke again, this time with more urgency. The sound severed arteries, shredded my skin, and I was left a raw and bleeding and pulsating parody of the human form. I've never felt more vulnerable, more exposed, and the primal dread I felt far outscaled the pain I was in, which in itself was excruciating beyond words.
"Your choice is up ahead, Sally. You must choose."
"How do I find the right path?" Sarah grabbed her dangling eyeball, pointing it at me.
"You will know," she said.
Every step sent tremors of torment throughout my body. but somehow I endured. I stood at the center of the crossroads yet again, only this time it was one of flesh and blood. And this time there were endless intersecting paths, sprouting into existence all skinless and raw, like underdeveloped fingers from a hand.
"Undefined paths," Sarah said. "They will only fully form upon your choice."
I clenched my fingers into fists, feeling the thick fabric of the gloves fighting back.
"What must I offer?" I asked. "Every path has a cost. You only have to choose."
The road wriggled and writhed and squirmed with countless alternatives, but one seemed different from the others, more settled in a sense, like it knew I was about to choose it. Cecil's smile, I thought. I took a cautious step toward it, and I could see now, clear as day, how it would make everything right again. How it would save Sarah and remove the darkness from my mind. The other paths went into a crazed frenzy, tossing and turning and throwing themselves into each other. Mighty wounds ripping them open, tearing them apart.
"Pay them no mind," Sarah said. "They do not enjoy the prospect of unexistence."
Back then, I didn't know what that meant. Unexistence. Seemed an odd choice of words. But then again, nothing in that place made much sense. I looked at Sarah, her dangling eye still staring at me between a dead index finger and thumb.
"What happens now?" I asked. "Now," she said, "you get to try again."
My chosen path swelled up, the thick veins almost bursting as it sucked the life out of all the other unformed sprouts. Without thinking about it, I walked onto it and felt a sharp pain in my right wrist before my mind exploded in an overload of sensations. When my mind returned to me, I was somewhere else, some place else, some time else. I remembered it perfectly, down to every last detail. It was cold outside, but not too cold. I was playing with Sarah down by the road, next to our driveway. It had snowed the night before, so we were frolicking in it, pushing each other around playfully. There came a sound, but I couldn't quite place it at the time. Without thinking, I shoved Sarah a little too hard, and she tumbled backwards onto the road. The passing plow truck had no time to stop. But this time, I didn't shove her. I grabbed her hand and pulled her back, embracing her tightly as the plow pushed past us. It took me a moment to understand why I felt so different, why I could only seem to grab her with one hand. "The sacrifice," I whispered, looking at the shriveled stump where my right hand used to be.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
I'm not sure exactly what I expected. That the past would magically change and drop me back off with Cecil at the crossroads? That when I'd mended what needed mending, I'd return to my 20-year-old self again?
None of that happened, though. I was still there, as my 10-year-old self, forced to live my life all over. The first few days were a bittersweet mixture of heaven and hell, overjoyed that Sarah was still there, but crushed by the realization that I was stuck in a body and time that were no longer mine. But then, over a month, maybe two, the oozing wound in my mind started closing, and I'd slowly forget who I used to be and become 10-year-old Sal again. And I got to try it again, have another go at it. It was a nice life, all things considered. My missing hand never really came up. A birth defect, somehow never truly bothering me until I turned 10. I got a prosthetic fitted, and I got to experience Sarah growing up to be a pain in the ass, as younger siblings should be. I did okay in school, and I got along fine with my parents. Life wasn't peachy, but it wasn't a rotting, maggot-infested apple either. And maybe it would have stayed that way if I hadn't gone to the party, if I hadn't bumped into Cecil. I turned a corner, and there he was, drink in one hand, and nothing in the other. My mind expanded again, like it did in the crossroads spaces. Old memories flooding back, pushing the new ones into the periphery. And everything I knew, or thought I knew, shattered into tiny fragments in an instant. I fell to the floor, blood pooling out of my nose in thick streams.
"You all right there?"
Cecil asked. I stumbled to my feet, wiping away the blood with the sleeve of my shirt.
Cecil?
He wrinkled his brow.
"Do I know you?"
he asked. There was something different about him, like he wasn't my Cecil. One-eyed, one-armed, sure, but there was something else.
"You're missing fingers,"
I said, staring at his hand. The index finger and the ring finger were both gone, shriveled stumps all that remained. Cecil smiled.
"You're an observant one, I'll give you that," he said, nodding down to his missing arm.
I just mean you didn't... You used to have fingers."
"Yeah, I am aware," he noted sourly.
His demeanor had changed, too. He wasn't the same suave, uncaring, larger-than-life Cecil I had once known. This one seemed distant and worried, eyes sunken and bloodshot. I felt lightheaded, my body not responding, legs weak and unsupportive. My vision blurred, the extreme pressure on my brain finally getting the best of me. I was told I collapsed right there on the floor, and I didn't regain consciousness until 2 weeks later. When the doctors brought me out of the induced coma, I was confused beyond description. The two lives had merged together, and at first I was unsure which one I had woken up in. Thankfully, my missing hand was a pretty obvious clue, and I suppose the drugs helped me dull the senses, allowing me to ease back into it somewhat gradually. Weirdly enough, though, my missing hand felt like it was still there. Not unusual, I guess. Phantom limb pain is fairly common. But it was more than that. Like I'd never really noticed it had been gone at all. I thought about Cecil then. My Cecil. And how we'd sometimes forget he was missing an arm. How long had I known him before the crossroads? 2 weeks? A month? Over the next few days, Cecil started fading from my memories. Some things remained from my other life, though.
the crossroads spaces in particular. I'd sit up at night listening to the eerie beeps and hollow buzzing of the hospital, drifting back to the endless road and all the impossibilities of the spaces. But then, a week or so later, after I'd been released, even those horrifying memories seemed like distant dreams. I figured my body, well, my mind, I suppose, had learned how to close the seeping wound faster. Some sort of defense mechanism, probably, to avoid getting repeated nosebleeds and brain squeezes. It wouldn't take long before I'd forgotten every last detail of the old life. So I did what anyone would do in my position. I played the lottery. It felt like an easy enough exploit. Buy a ticket, check the results, memorize the winning lottery numbers, then go back to the crossroads with the ticket in hand. Jump back to the moment before I bought the ticket and change the numbers accordingly. I felt silly digging the hole this time around, having to use my elbows to support my one good hand. Awkward angles and poorly aimed thrusts caused me to fall flat on my face more than once, but I got it done. I buried the ticket, closing my eyes as the world around me started to smudge and blur together. "Sally," a voice said, "welcome back." I opened my eyes slowly, as if I thought it would help ease in the overwhelming sensory overload of the crossroads. I was wrong, of course. My brain expanded again, every last one of my memories elbowing their way back in, and my mind was assaulted once more by the colors, and the space, and the shapes. I buckled under again, singing, "Brain drops keep falling from my head, but that doesn't mean my body will soon be turning dead." "You've changed, Sally," Sarah said. I looked up at Sarah, her eyes still dangling from the socket, bones protruding from her mangled 4-year-old corpse shape. "I saved you. Saved her," I muttered. "Why are you still here? Why are you still like that?" "I have no control of your perception of me, Sally," Sarah said. "I am as you made me." The skin-melting voice of the pathless washed over me, and I felt my blood boil and my eyes split open. "You know what you must do, Sally." Another tormented walk up to the squirming paths, the new ones emerging like snaking tumors for every step. Another bellow from the pathless as I hesitated in my choice, this time mincing my organs to mush. Another path revealing itself to me, sucking the life from all the other unexisting choices as I stepped toward it. "One thing," I said, my foot hovering inches above the path. "What happened to my Cecil?" "As you diverge from a path, all that remains behind is what it has always been."
"And what is that?"
"Unexisting."
The pain wasn't as obvious this time around. I felt an ache, then a sharp prod. But then it was all over. I came back into my existence in the store where I'd purchased the ticket, took a single step toward the counter, and tumbled to the ground clumsily. "Toes," I thought, my mind swimming in the confusion. "I have no toes." They were only missing from my left foot, but that didn't make it much better. Turns out your toes are fairly important for your balance, and walking around without your little piggies takes some practice. I figured I'd forget about it soon enough, and my mind would absorb this new unreality so that I didn't have to. I hopped weirdly to the counter, purchased the ticket with the winning lottery numbers, and called my mom to come pick me up.
I spent the next few days trying not to move so much. Just stumbling around short distances, finding excuses to not do much else. When the day came for the lottery numbers to be revealed, I sat down on the couch, a vast pile of unhealthy stuff in front of me to devour. "This is it," I thought. "A life of plenty." And then came the lottery numbers. And not a single one was on my ticket. I can't remember much of what happened next. I might have tripped over the table in a maddening, unbalanced quest to punch something. I might have slammed my head repeatedly on the wall. Or maybe I just threw myself at whatever sharp edge I could find in a futile attempt to end it all. All I know is that I woke up at the hospital, 50% handless and toeless, and with sore stitches across my forehead. "Look who's awake," a familiar voice called. "How are you feeling, Fingers?" I turned to face him, my head pounding with every movement. "Cecil?" I asked confusedly. He was in bed next to me, a Cecil smile plastered on his face. "I still don't know who you are," he said. He still had those sad, sunken eyes. Not my Cecil then, but a Cecil nonetheless. "Sally," I said. "Sal." "Nice to meet you, Sal. Got problems staying on your feet too, huh?" he said, pointing at his head. He was bandaged up pretty good, but I could still make out a rather sizable bump near his temple. But that's not what caught my attention. "Your leg," I said, staring at the place where his lower left leg should have been. Cecil rolled his eyes. "Here we go again." "No, I mean, what happened to it?" He shrugged. "Birth defect, they tell me." I shook my head vigorously. "This can't be happening," I muttered. "I didn't go back that far. It shouldn't have changed." My vision started to blur again, my brain firing a million neurons all at once. Temporal insanity? Some kind of off-linear madness? Was I going non-Euclidean bonkers? "Cecil," I mumbled. "Don't go there. Don't visit the Liberator again." I could see his eye widening, maybe in surprise or shock or fear, or all of the above, before I passed out from the blood loss, possibly caused by the massive amount shooting out of my nose. This time they put me into an induced coma for roughly a week. My brain was swollen again, scraping against the cranium walls like it was trying to get the hell out of there. And the doctors and neurosurgeons had no idea what was going on. They'd reached out to experts from all over the country, and at some point, I was afraid I'd end up like a lab rat, stuffed away in a steel box somewhere in Area 51. But my mind had already started closing the wound, even faster this time around, and bits and pieces from my accumulating pasts had already slipped away entirely. I remembered the crossroads, of course, and the ticket. And Cecil. I tried tracking him down, but I couldn't for the life of me remember his last name. You'd think there weren't many Cecils in a town as small as ours, but no one seemed to know him, and the hospital refused to give out any information about him whatsoever. In the end, I only had one option. I could fix this, I figured, like I'd fixed Sarah. I had a bone to pick with the Pathless in any case. It owed me a lottery prize the way I saw it. I still had the bloody shirt from the night I met Cecil for the first time. For the second time.
Bear with me here. And without wasting any more time. My mind already hazy, memories fading to fuzzy, dreamlike inklings. I went back to the crossroads, dug another hole, and buried the shirt. Time and space and reality warped around me once more, and I soon found myself leaking brain matter as my mind wound was savagely ripped open again. I fell to my knees on the road of flesh and veins, steadying myself on the lithe corpse body of Sarah as all the years came flooding back.
"The journey is becoming easier," Sarah said. "Soon, you will become as much a part of us as we are of you."
I'm not sure that particular piece of information was comforting or terrifying. Perhaps a little bit of both. But right then and there, it didn't faze me. I stared Sarah right into the eyeball and snarled at her.
"Why didn't it work?" I yelled. "I had the winning ticket memorized. I chose the right path."
Sarah shook her head, her broken neck making disturbing creaking sounds, like a ship's mast about to snap.
"You still don't understand, Sally," she said. "Every diverging path is shaped by unexistence. You could go back a million times, and every experience unfolded would be unique. A lottery is a random sequence of numbers. A random sequence of numbers times a million would still be a random sequence of numbers."
"Well, that fucking sucks," I said. "You could have said something, Sarah." Sarah smiled, her split lip showing more flesh than I was comfortable with.
"It is not for us to steer the fools away from their folly," she said. "Besides, where would be the fun in that?"
"Fun?" I yelled, brain juices dripping from my eyes.
"You think this is fun?"
Sarah held out the dangling eyeball again.
"Mildly amusing, yes. Your kind seems obsessed with self-destruction."
The pathless let out a wail that cracked open my skin, pus and blood leaking out, quickly forming a lukewarm pool of bodily fluids around me. It was getting increasingly bored with my antics, and somehow, I could understand that.
"Make your choice, Sally," Sarah said, "and make it a good one."
In endless pain, I started crawling toward the emerging paths. "Cecil," I said, turning back to Sarah, a torrent of shame washing over me. How could I forget?
"He keeps changing, regardless of how far I go back."
Sarah smiled again, and I had to turn away at the horrid sight.
"Ah, yes, the other traveler," she said. "Linear intersection, temporal entanglement. You are both diverging from the same path. It happens from time to time. I'm sure you will sort it out before it's too late."
"What does that mean, too late?"
"This is your path, Sally. He is a ghost, an existence pretending to exist. He cannot change his own path, but he will never stop trying."
"I don't understand." I wasn't aware of how close I was to the paths, and I suppose my subconscious had already chosen for me. Before my mind went blank, I heard a loud slurp, followed by a soft ripping sound, kind of like wet fabric tearing at the seams. My right eye suddenly got very itchy too. I was back at the party. Loud, obnoxious music hammering at my eardrums. Once, a lifetime or two ago, I would probably have enjoyed it. Buzzing life, vivid and uncaring. I sighed deeply, instinctively scratching at my eye. My finger went through it, into the empty socket beyond. "Fuck," I said. "Shit," I added. Cecil rounded the corner in an electric wheelchair, nothing in one hand and nothing in the other hand. No hands. He looked weary and tired, a darkness in his eye that I'd recognize anywhere. He was about to give up.
"Aye, buddies," he said when he noticed me. A forced smile, not a Cecil smile.
I nodded.
"Aye, buddies." "Cecil," he said. "Nice to meet you."
"You can't go back, Cecil," I blurted out. "You can't see the Liberator anymore." His eye widened again, and I could feel his brain expanding, the mind wound splitting open.
How?
I bent down to face him, placing my stubby hand on his shoulder. "I've been there," I said, pointing at my eye. "But you need to stop now."
I can't," he mumbled, blood suddenly flooding from his nose. I have to fix it."
"What?" I asked. "What do you have to fix?" He looked at me solemnly, a single tear running down his pale, lethargic face.
"Father," he muttered.
And then his head went limp, and his consciousness faded. We called an ambulance, and I figured I'd stay at the hospital until I was sure he'd make it. "Father," I kept thinking. Cecil, my Cecil, had told me he'd lost his father, but that he'd gotten over it, that he'd learned to live with it. Why couldn't this Cecil do the same? Why was it different? Then I remembered what Sarah, the guide, had told me. That Cecil was a ghost, unexistence trying to exist. And then I remembered something my Cecil had said the first time we met. And I think I almost understood it then, how it all connected and what I had to do. But then a concerned-looking nurse poked me, and I lost my train of thought. "Have you seen your friend?" she asked. I shook my head. "No. Why?" He somehow slipped away, right under our noses. Kinda curious, you know, considering his, physical." I got to my feet, still fairly clumsy given my toe situation. "Fuck," I said, and stumble ran out of there. He was going to the crossroads. I just knew it. Where else would he escape to? I was kind of hoping I was fast enough to catch up to him, but as it turns out, an electric wheelchair is faster than a stumbling, toeless traveler, even on the best of days. So when I got there, the place was as deserted as ever.
"Fuck you, Pathless," I mumbled under my breath.
"You're not getting my friend." I needed a memory, so I grabbed a cigarette, the same brand Cecil used to smoke, and started clawing into the dirt with my good hand. I didn't care how deep it was, honestly. I don't think the Pathless cared either way. He just wanted us, our memories, our flesh, or happiness. I kicked some dirt over the hole and held my breath. It was easier this time around. I'd only been away from the crossroads for a few hours, so I guess my mind was still all gaping wounds, the madness bleeding into my consciousness unrestricted. I closed my eye as the sprawling chaos came to a crescendo and held out my hand. Sarah grabbed it, her bony 4-year-old thumb rubbing against my skin creepily.
"So soon?" Sarah asked. "Did you not like the choice?"
I opened my eye, letting the colors and the spaces and the shapes of the pathless wash over me. "Bring me to him," I said. "Bring me to Cecil." Sarah looked at me with her dangling eye.
"Are you sure, Sally?" she asked. "This particular path will only have 2 choices."
I grabbed the dangling eye, stretching the oculus nerve to its tearing point, and stared into it. "I am sure," I said. Sarah laughed, a hollow corpse rattle, like a cold autumn wind blowing through your chimney.
"Very well, then. It is your choice after all," she said.
She led me up to the flesh road, the pathless holding its voice for once. Up ahead, I could see a 2-pronged path diverging from the veiny road, and lying at the center of it.
"Cecil!"
I yelled, breaking free from Sarah's deathly cold grip, and stumbling as fast as I could to reach him. He had lost his remaining leg now, and all that was left of him was a 1-eyed head on a morbidly bony torso.
"I don't know you," he mumbled incoherently. "You can't be here."
I sat down next to him and lifted him up in a tight embrace.
"It's all right,"
I said, tears, blood, snot, and brain liquid streaming down my face.
"I'll fix it. I can fix it."
The pathless finally lost its patience, and with little but a whisper, he flayed us both. Our exposed bodies melded together in flesh and blood and sinew and muscle. I could feel Cecil's heartbeat against mine, as one. And I knew then that the choice lay before me.
"Choose, Sally,"
Sarah said. I looked at her, my eye nothing but liquidy goo seeping out of its socket. A sudden realization then.
"I was a ghost too, wasn't I?"
I asked. Sarah smiled again, but this time I welcomed it. The horror, the memory of her once mangled carcass bouncing lifelessly down the icy road next to our home, like a rag doll.
"You were," she said, "at the mercy of a traveler much like yourself."
"Cecil," I whispered. "He set me free."
"Gave your own existence a shape and a form and a time. In the process, losing you forever." "So he's alive?" "In a manner of speaking. He exists on his path, as you exist on yours. But true paths can never intersect. Thus, you shall never meet again. This was his gift to you."
I turned my gaze to the 2 paths squirming before me. For the first time, my subconscious couldn't manifest my choice for me, and I was left a sobbing mess, holding Cecil tightly, our frenetic heartbeats synchronized.
"Your father was a traveler too, wasn't he?"
I whispered into Cecil's ear. It had dawned on me now why Cecil, my Cecil, had been so obsessed with murder the first time we met.
"You killed him,"
I whispered.
"You killed your father to inherit his path."
"Not quite," Sarah said. "He stopped trying to save him."
I kissed Cecil on what was left of his forehead.
"I understand now," I said.
2 paths," Sarah said. 1 choice."
"Death or death," I murmured, I looked down at my hand, the glove sticking to it like black tar. Cecil or Sarah?
Save one and the other dies. Simplest thing in the world.
I stumbled to my feet, still clutching onto Cecil like he was the last living thing in the world. And in a way, he was.
Please, he mumbled. Father.
There's only one choice, isn't there? I said to no one except maybe myself. Sarah laughed, showering us both in corpse phlegm.
And there is no choice.
I closed my eye and walked onto the path I had chosen. There never was, I said. When we emerged at the crossroads, I was still embracing him. I gently laid him down in the dirt, stroking his chin. My tears dripped down on his tortured existence, and I bowed down one last time to kiss him.
I'm sorry, I said, clutching his neck with my one good hand, now missing a ring finger.
I guess the Pathless took some pity on me after all.
It's the only way.
Squeezing the life out of another human being isn't as easy as it sounds. When you love that person with all your heart and soul, it's even worse. Once he'd stopped breathing, I broke down completely. I spent the night next to him, crying, letting my fingers run through his soft hair, stroking his face, and listening to the non-sound of his dead heart. He was the love of my life, and I never got to tell him that. Sarah joined me at his funeral, and I made sure to tell her all about him, how different he was, how happy and free and special he was. I never told her what he did for us, for me, of course. That's a burden for me to carry. And the greatest loss of all is that I won't be carrying it for much longer. In a week or so, Cecil will be nothing but a fading dream, a distant memory that I won't be able to hold on to. That's why I'm writing this, so that someone out there will know who he was and how he was so much larger than life and the most caring, selfless person I've ever known. Thank you, Cecil. I'll never choose another path again. Love you forever. Sal.
That was The Pathless by Tor Anders Ulvan, performed by the incomparable Jeff Sturtevant. If you've listened to Jeff's narrations before, you know the kind of raw intensity he brings to every performance, and tonight was no exception. His ability to breathe life and terror into a tale is second to none. You can find more of Jeff's work on Amazon and Audible, or visit flexfiction.com to explore his extensive library of horror, suspense, and dark fiction. Be sure to let him know how much you appreciate his incredible storytelling. And let's not forget Velox Books, the publisher of tonight's tale. If The Pathless left you craving more mind-bending horror, then you're in luck. Tonight's story is part of an incredible new collection from Velox Books, featuring a lineup of terrifying tales by Tor Anders Ulvan. Described by No Sleep fans as a master of the unknown, Ulvan's collection plunges readers into worlds of existential dread and cosmic horror. Imagine an unlucky man falling endlessly into the sky. A gruesome dinner ritual where family members remove their left eyes before the real horror begins. Or a father trapped in servitude by his rapidly aging, mind-controlling daughter. Each story in this collection peels back the veil of the familiar, revealing a world where obscurity isn't just darkness. It's alive, waiting, watching. Critics have praised the collection as, quote, an incredible read, unquote, with author C.D. Kester calling it, quote, a must-have for horror fans, unquote. And Michael J. Steele, author of Late Swing, says, quote, reading his words and wrapping my head around his monstrosities makes me giddy with imagination, unquote. This collection, published by Velox Books on January 24, 2025, is now available on Amazon, starting at just $15.95. Don't miss your chance to add this chilling masterpiece to your collection. Visit VeloxBooks.com to learn more. That's a wrap for tonight's journey into the unknown, dear listeners. Thank you for joining us on this harrowing adventure through time, memory, and the roads best left untraveled. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, we'd love for you to show your support, leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite listening platform helps us continue delivering the best in horror audio. For our YouTube audience, be sure to hit that thumbs up button, leave a comment, and subscribe. Tap that bell icon so you never miss an episode. We've got plenty more nightmares coming your way. Want more chilling tales with no interruptions? Head over to ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and become a patron, starting at just $7.99 per month, or even less if you opt for an annual plan. You'll gain exclusive access to our entire library, including ad-free episodes and bonus content you won't find anywhere else. It's the ultimate way to support the show and help us continue bringing nightmares to life. We'd also love to connect with you. Follow us on social media, whether it's Facebook, X, or Instagram. You'll find sneak peeks, updates, and community discussions about the stories you love. And don't be shy about tagging us or sharing your thoughts. Your engagement means the world to us. Finally, one last thank you to Velox Books for providing tonight's incredible tale, and Jeff Sturdivant for yet another masterful performance. If you enjoyed The Pathless and want to explore more fiction that bends the limits of horror and reality, visit VeloxBooks.com to discover more haunting collections, including Hyper Obscure, the latest from tonight's featured author, Tor Anders Alvin, available now. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and as always, it's been a pleasure taking you on our never-ending trail of terror tonight. Join us again this Wednesday and next Monday and every week thereafter, where we'll bring you even more chilling tales to haunt your dreams. Until next time, stay safe and stay scared. Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.